the rest. But then one night, when I was propositioning men by the station, two men grabbed me from behind. At first I thought it was the police, but then I realized that they were gangsters. They dragged me into a back street, showed me some kind of knife, and took me to their local headquarters. They shoved me into a back room, stripped my clothes off, strung me up by the wrists, and proceeded to rape me over and over in front of a video camera. I kept my eyes closed the entire time and tried not to think, which was not difficult for me, because I felt neither pain nor pleasure. Afterwards, they showed me the video and told me that if I didn't want anyone to see it, I should join their organization and work for them. They took my student ID from my purse. If I refused to do what they wanted, they said they would send a copy of the tape to my parents and blackmail them for all the money they were worth. I had no choice. I told them I would do as they said, that it didn't matter to me, and it really didn't matter. Nothing mattered to me then. They pointed out that my income would go down if I joined their organization, because they would take 70%, but that I would no longer have to take the trouble to find customers by myself or worry about the police. They would send me high-quality customers. If I went on propositioning men indiscriminately, I would end up strangled to death in some hotel room. After that, I didn't have to stand on street corners anymore. All I had to do was show up at their office in the evening, and they would tell me which hotel to go to. They sent me good customers, as they had promised. I'm not sure why, but I received special treatment. Maybe it was because I looked so innocent. I had an air of breeding about me that the other girls lacked. There were probably a lot of customers who wanted this not-so-professional type. The other girls had three or more customers a day, but I could get away with seeing only one or at most two. The other girls carried beepers with them and had to hurry to some run-down hotel when the office called them to sleep with men of uncertain background. In my case, though, I always had a proper appointment in a proper first-class hotel, or sometimes even a condo. My customers were usually older men, rarely younger ones. The office paid me once a week, not as much as I had made on my own, but not a bad amount boosted by individual tips from customers. Some customers wanted me to do some pretty weird things for them, of course, but I didn't mind. The weirder the request, the bigger the tip. A few of the men started asking for me on a regular basis. These tended to be good tippers. I saved my money in several different accounts, but by then the money didn't matter to me. It was just rows of figures. I was living for one thing only, and that was to confirm my own lack of feeling. I would wake up in the morning and lie there, checking that my body was not sensing anything that could be called pain. I would open my eyes, slowly collect my thoughts, and then, one part at a time, check the feeling I had in my body from head to foot. I had no pain at all. Did this mean that there was nothing hurting me, or that even though there was pain, I was not feeling it? I couldn't tell the difference. Either way, it didn't hurt. In fact, I had no sensations at all. After this procedure, I would get out of bed, go to the bathroom and brush my teeth. Then I would strip off my pajamas and take a hot shower. There was a terrible lightness to my body. It was so light and airy, it didn't feel like my body. I felt as if my spirit had taken up residence inside a body that was not my own. I looked at it in the mirror, but between myself and the body I saw there, I sensed a long, terrible distance. A life without pain. It was the very thing I had dreamed of for years. But now that I had it, I couldn't find a place for myself within it. A clear gap separated me from it, and this caused me great confusion. I felt as if I were not anchored to the world, this world that I had hated so passionately, this world that I had reviled for its unfairness and injustice, this world where at least I knew who I was. Now, the world had ceased to be the world, and I had ceased to be me. I began to cry a lot. In the afternoons, I would go to the park, the Shinjuku Imperial Gardens or Yoyogi Park, to sit on the grass and cry. Sometimes I would cry for an hour or two at a time, sobbing out loud. Passers-by would stare at me, but I didn't care. I wish that I had died that time, that I had ended my life on the night of May 29. How much better off I would be. But now I could not even die.